was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to Season 4 of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever done anything wild enough to end up in a Richard Parker book. Today's title is Richard Parker's Top 5 Wildest Moments of the Jackson Purchase. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who never communicates out of fear and yet never fears to communicate. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
Is that from something? That sounded familiar, like a historical reference that I'm being tested on.
Very smart. It came from JFK.
JFK. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, never fear to negotiate.
That's him in his inaugural address. Yeah. That's very, very good. You are learning. You're coming along very
that
well.
Is so, I'm older than you, Brent.
But
talk
as a historian, you're growing as an historian.
Man, is that how you treat your students, little 17-year-old people? That's fine, I guess.
Definitely. And it's also how we treat our special guests around here. With us today is a very special guest, the man who worked for 3 years on a book called The Mild World of the Jackson Purchase until he realized that the title might be holding him back, Richard Parker.
Thank you.
Hey, Richard, I'm so glad that you are here to provide a buffer zone.
Well, I'm excited
like
to be
the
here.
Mongolia of podcasting, I suppose.
Yeah. Draw focus away from somebody.
Okay.
You know what, Brent?
What?
Speaking of focus on me, it's the fourth season. Richard is our guest, first episode, fourth season. Can you imagine?
The debut of season 4.
Right. And that people would be listening to it now thinking that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they're counting the seasons.
Is this what you
get?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess when we get to 100, we'll talk about if we ever dreamed this would happen.
Yeah. You'll have a big special episode and all that stuff.
I'll have a cake.
We'll save that. So our main event is obviously Richard Parker's book that he's got out. We'll talk all about that. We will also hear Kentucky's history according to children in our Kidstorian segment. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
Give your throne a vacation and smoke a fresh cigarette. If the cigarette you've been smoking stings or burns your throat, switch to Cowles and see the difference. It's the peppery dust left in tobacco by inefficient cleaning methods that makes you cough. There's no peppery dust in Cowles. That's whisked away by a special vacuum cleaning process. Cowles Factory Fresh patented moisture-proof cellophane, which costs nearly twice as much, seals in all the natural aroma and freshness so tightly that wet weather cannot make Cowles damp, nor drought weather make them dry. Cowles are milder and more throat-friendly because they're dust-free and fresh. So follow your doctor's recommendation and give your throat a vacation. Switch to Cowles for just one day, if you can. And tune in to the Cowles Quarter Hour featuring Morton Downey and the 21 Cowles Orchestra.
Go ahead, let me have it. Just let me have it.
Richard, I've got a question about this.
Yes.
Is it the dust or the smoke that's the problem?
I'm not sure. Maybe a combination of both.
Maybe the dust in the smoke?
Yeah. Well, they just get all the dust. I don't know. Right.
There wasn't any dust, was there? This is all fake. They're making that up. There wasn't any dust.
It's just dust-free now. It does sound better, though, right?
Of course it sounds great.
It implies that the others do have dust.
Right.
And that's
which kind of, they don't.
Right.
Or they all do or something.
Well, maybe they did in the olden days.
I'm not buying anything about this particular advertising.
I think I said that I sent you the short one. That was the long one. That thing was
oh,
just endless.
Oh, I wanted to see the short one.
Well, I went back and just chopped it up a little bit. But yeah, that had everything.
Okay. Well, yeah, we didn't want to miss a moment, so that was perfect.
I'm a different person now that I recorded that.
I think you were lost on an island somewhere.
I reached inside myself for that. It was an attempt at Thurston Howell. The little Jack Nicholson in there every once in a while.
Yeah.
Completely inadvertently.
I can see that for sure. And now it's time for the cutest segment in the history of history podcasting.
Kidstorians.
Oh, I remember this. Some dude just got a tank stuck in the mud while he was going on an expedition of some sort. I remember this.
Oh, from our other season.
Yes.
Very good. Very good.
I'm not answering.
That's a friend of the show right there.
Oh, those two little kids? They're listening, obviously. They've been listening.
Very cool.
Because he's thinking about the season two, episode one.
Yeah, he went to that tank story.
Yeah. So some guy was Matthew Scott, remember?
Right, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Now, you got the tank stunk. Stuck.
Yeah, stuck.
Stuck
is the right word.
Yeah, he got it stuck.
Yeah.
You remember, somebody's making those kids listen to those podcasts. Or they don't get any ice cream.
What, making them? They love it. They beg me for it. They're like, I thought we were going to go to Pizza Inn, but then we really want to do some more of these podcast segments.
Right. Daddy, play another podcast for us.
Please.
Curious George, go ahead.
So the photo they were looking at was not actually a photo of Matthew Scott getting the tank stuck. It was at Fort Knox in World War II. They're training for the eventual reality of going over to Europe.
This is in mud. He wasn't really in mud. I think he just got it caught like in a valley, a little ditch, and got wedged in.
Yeah, that's right. So they're running the tank through its paces here, kind of like Matthew Scott described for us. But this just happens to be in the 1940s instead. So I thought they did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, why not? It was reminiscent of Sesame Street. That's where my mind went. I've got a great idea for a whole new podcast.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you're going to do this.
The spinoff of the podcast? Are we ready for the spinoff?
He's going to do it without me, but like kids. History for kids. There are podcasts like that, but like a little, you know, you explain it to them on their level. And I'm telling you, like parents of third graders, they'd say, we're going to listen to the podcast.
Okay. So we're gonna have to abandon ship on this one and then go in that direction.
We get like 8-9 podcasts going.
Okay. Just podcast.
A cute one to explain it for kids. There are science ones like that for kids. Anyway. Okay.
Actually, that sounds like a really great idea.
I have ideas.
We're now going to have to think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's true. Now for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one.
Here we are.
Yeah, finally. We've been dominating.
We're here.
Now it's time. Yes. Go. Richard is going to talk. Yeah.
We're going to sell his book. That's what we're going to do. So tell us about your book, Richard.
So I wrote this book. It took me about 3 years to research at all the local libraries and used a lot of primary sources and a few secondary sources. But actually, there's not a lot in book form about the Jackson Purchase. So that's what kind of got me started on this whole project. And October 19th, 2018. So later this year is the 200th anniversary of the treaty, which opened this area up for settlement. So that's kind of the inspiration.
Right. Considered the anniversary of the Jackson Purchase then.
Yeah. Perfectly timed.
Yeah.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Right. Yeah. So you you were looking for the interesting stories that are out there, and there was no good place to find them all together, make it easy to read. Right. That's a great idea.
Until now.
Yeah.
And I can tell you firsthand, this is a very fun book. If you're looking for something fun and not too heavy.
Fun to read. Right.
And informative, this is pretty good. So
I'd
say run out there and take a peek at this one at a minimum. You've got all kinds of wild moments in there, but we're going to do your top five wild moments. Number five is Nathan Stubblefield. Tell us about him.
I like Stubblefield's story because I think it's very reminiscent of our area. Stubblefield was an inventor, And there's not a lot of people here in the area that we can kind of look to and say, oh, man, this guy invented something. But Nathan Stubblefield is remembered for inventing what was called the wireless telephony. And basically what that was an early apparatus he used to communicate wirelessly to another unit. And most of these experiments took place on his farm there in Murray, Kentucky.
Right. Now, he's kind of a sad case, though, because he doesn't really get the credit for it. Is that one of these classic things where other people are simultaneously working on the same thing and he just didn't get to it first?
Yes.
Or what?
Yes, yeah. Marconi beat him to the punch, basically, got more, you know, the fame was there. And Stubblefield's principles of his unit was much different than what anyone else was working on. He actually transmitted his sound waves through the ground. And some of the other ones were, you know, obviously what we use today as radio, you know, broadcast it over the air. And so Stubblefield kind of had some difficulties regulating that. And, you know, maybe that's what it was. It just wasn't commercially viable for, you know, people to pick up on.
Right.
But, I mean, it did make national news. Several times New York Times picked up his stories, the Washington Times. I mean, he actually had a test on the Potomac River there in Washington, D.C., and people came out to that and learned about it.
So. Right, when people would invent things that would happen, they would do, like, public displays of it, and then the newspapers would come out and report on it.
Yes.
Did he end up, like, a lot of these times, these mutually discovering people will go to court?
No,
fight
actually,
over, like, the rights to claim
yeah.
it.
Yeah. He just kind of died in Murray, Kentucky, obscure, is what happened. And, you know, it's kind of a tragic story, but a lot of people in the Murray community had lobbied to get his story remembered. And actually, Murray State University has an archive dedicated solely to his stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Dr. Lochte there.
I was about to say,
Big on Stubblefield.
And he
wrote
was
books
a
about it, too.
Big champion of getting him remembered. And, I think he was actually ended up in one of the radio museums there, some of his stuff, as an early pioneer of radio.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So he is sort of a microcosm of the region in Kentucky, right?
Just kind
of.
Oh, yeah, he's one of those. I mean, he
can't
did
get no respect.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He did an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Though, really, yeah. And so there's some debate there. And he has family still around. There's Stubblefields that are related to him in the area. Yeah.
Yep.
That brings us to number four, which is Paul Twitchell.
Yes, Twitchell.
Tell us about Twitchell.
Twitchell is one of those guys I found that I had really never heard of, and it just kind of blew my mind. Here's a guy born in Paducah, went to school here, and created his own religion. I mean, come on. That's crazy.
Why not do that?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if it works.
Yeah. Doesn't everyone secretly want to do that?
Or he made it the way he wanted it to be,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ek Ankar, that's what it's called. And it took me a long time to get that down.
when was this?
This was all in the 60s.
Yeah.
He basically came up with it, I think it was 61. And basically he grew this religion until he died, and it's still there.
Yeah.
From what I've found, it looks like there's anywhere from tens of thousands of people followed this.
Okay.
Yeah,
say it again.
So,
what was that again?
Ek Ankar.
Ek Ankar.
Yeah, and the leader of the movement is called the Ek Master.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
and
he was the Ek Master
He was
for
the
a
Ek
while.
Master, yeah, until 71 when he died.
Yeah.
But he actually attended.
Wasn't your nickname in college the Ek Master?
The Ek Master? That was the Egg Master.
The egg master.
My eggs, my scrambled eggs.
Flawless omelets,
I don't know what you're about.
I mean, he went to Murray State, what was the Murray's Teachers College then, left there and went to Western Kentucky.
Right.
Never really earned a degree from either one of them. Went into the Navy, and then once he got out, he kind of started on this path of enlightenment,
right.
I guess.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think he followed a lot of the teachings of Swami Prenananda, and I may have gotten too many nanas in there, but apparently he was an Indian guru.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where his teachings
come
from.
Well, in the 60s, though, that happens with a lot of people, isn't it? Like, I don't know about this group, but, you know, cult leaders sprung up. California, part of that hippie movement. Mm-hmm. People would create their own religions or versions of that and then bring people into it.
Yeah.
And some of those ended up being not so nice and some probably perfectly nice. Yeah.
Was there any dancing in the religion?
I am not sure.
Because I was just thinking the perfect name is the Twitch.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. That Twitchell.
So.
Well, I keep asking because I know people maybe listening are going to want to Google this.
Yeah, Google it up.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff there. It's alive and well.
Still going. Okay. Yeah. Still believers. Oh, yeah.
There's stuff all over YouTube. They have outreach. It's there.
Twitchell.
Fantastic.
Outreach.
So, yeah.
I'm sure you can dedicate your whole life to following it. So.
Well, why not? And you heard about it here first, folks.
So there you go.
Your third, number three, is the Lion Quintuplets.
Yes.
Tell us about them.
This is a very tragic story. It's probably one of the heaviest in the book. And a lot of times when I do live presentations, I try to forewarn people because this is a very tragic kind of story. But
that's only the second warning we've ever had about our show. This is good.
So just letting you know, viewers, if there's any children in the room.
Though. Yeah, it's a sad story.
Basically what happened was this one occurred in Mayfield, and Oscar and Elizabeth Lyons had already had, I think, 8 children. And basically she became pregnant with 5 babies. Mm-hmm. And once she had them, it was 5 baby boys. So naturally she named them Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Paul, you know?
Right.
Creative. That's as good a 5 as any, right?
Yeah.
So this quickly made national news.
Right.
And unfortunately for the Lyons, they lived on the main railroad there, the Illinois Central. And so people traveled from all over the United States to see this. Mm-hmm. And so basically what happened was is the babies did not have a quiet, kind of safe environment, that's needed for newborns. And basically what happened was they were handled to death. And so the baby boys all die within about 3 weeks of their birth.
Oh, boy.
It was just a circus event.
Yeah.
And you can read about it in some of the primary newspapers there. And
so it's around turn of the century.
Turn of the
era.
Century. Yep.
And people would do that. They would flock to sites like this, sometimes mm-hmm. just ordinary people.
Oh, yeah.
And, they pay a nickel or a dime to see. I don't know if they did that, but, the people didn't mind mm-hmm. coming out to see and then would just go in their house. And the kids were just exposed to too many people too quickly.
Exactly.
You know what their problem was? They didn't have television yet.
Yeah.
Because today you would just watch this on cable.
Well, that is true.
That's the end of it.
It is true.
I mean, you could read it in the newspaper.
So, so basically what happened, though, is that the mother took the babies and she had them embalmed. And she built a glass case for them and she hid them underneath her bed.
Yes.
And the reason why she did this and she didn't want to give them a proper burial is because she didn't want them to become a sideshow attraction.
Right.
And that stayed underneath her bed until the Truman administration, when she wrote to Truman, and he secured a place for the babies to be put.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and it's a medical museum in Washington, D.C., Army Medical Museum, and they are specimen 43411.
I didn't think you were going to go there.
Yeah.
So these are viewable?
Yes.
These
from children? What I've found,
still.
You can
special request
to see it. I've heard people talk about this before. Yeah. I think I have seen a photograph, and they're dead. Okay. Man, downer.
Yeah, it's kind of a heavy story.
So let's get to an upper, which is Jackson Purchase Feuds.
Yeah.
We're not really known for our feuds. Yeah. Typically, we think of Pike County, Breathitt County, all in the eastern part of the state. So mm-hmm. what about these feuds?
So we had 2 really big feuds that took place here, and these made national news. They're overlooked. They're in none of the Kentucky feuds, the books and stuff on Kentucky feuds. These two aren't included. But one of them actually is in Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi. And that occurred down in Fulton County in Kentucky on the Obion County in Tennessee and Fulton County kind of line. And these feuds would play out, 10 years plus in multiple, different family members fighting.
Right. So this wasn't a violent feud like people think of the Wakefield and McCoys.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And so the first one is the Darnell Lane feud. And actually, Mark Twain writes it as a Darnell Watson feud. And from what I kind of found from the primary papers, maybe he changed the name to protect the Lanes because the Darnells were kind of the aggressors there. But then other sources said that the Lanes were the aggressors, so I'm not sure.
Right.
But the primary sources point to the Lanes. And basically what happened was is that the Lanes and the Darnells got into it. They both kind of operated ferry boats between Kentucky and Missouri, and that kind of started this.
Economic competition, and yeah, then they got upset with each
exactly.
other.
Exactly. And so what happened was is one of Darnell's sons gets shot, and so the Lanes decide, okay, well, it's time to lay low. Let's get out of town. So they go to get on one of the steamboats there, and anyway, the Darnells had already found out about the plan, and they were secretly on board the steamboat. So when the Lanes walked up on the plank there, bam, you know what happened.
Yeah.
And so he
started shooting?
Yeah, kills all the Lanes.
Oh.
And so this really kicks off the big feud, and that's what kind of makes, you know, the story in Life on the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. And it was nationally put in the newspapers?
Yes. Yeah, and eventually General Darnell was kind of the patriarch. That was the one. And he eventually, a few years down the road, turns himself in. But it's not the end of the story. I mean, his sons fight multiple people, different people. The Lanes retaliate. So, you know, that was one of the big ones there. But it's like Britt said, you know, economic competition there. I mean, everyone was, you know, carrying goods across the river there and down the river. So
right, and a different type of law enforcement that didn't exist or just wasn't possible the way that people lived kind of.
Yeah, and you know, this is early 1880s.
Right.
So, you know, it's a different world there, and especially where we're at in Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah,
so there's no SWAT team, and then also another part of it is that they don't always trust law enforcement because sometimes in a small community, you're related to somebody in law enforcement, and are they playing favorites? And we see that in a lot of the feud stuff in the eastern part of the state for sure.
Yeah.
And then your number one thing.
Oh, there was one more.
Shelby Jenkins Taylor.
And this one occurred in Ballard County, and very similar, the same thing. Families get into it. But this one, the main thing, and I'm going to cut the story short, but the main feud that made the national news was over a hog. And what had happened was, is one of the Taylor family, the hogs got into the Shelby's cornfield and ate, you know, of course, all the corn up. And so the Shelby's, you know, retaliated and basically ended up, you know, beating up the Taylors and eventually killing them. And so this kind of made, you know, the national news. And of course, when people got into major, you know, conflicts, they always disappeared. And of course, when you're in the Jackson Purchase in 1880s, 1890s, it's pretty easy to disappear.
Right.
So, you know, these would kick off huge manhunts and lynchings, and, you know, they're looking for this. And, you know, eventually he turns himself in. The court goes in, and, you know, basically they say he acted in self-defense and is let off. And that kind of goes under the table, and, you know, I didn't find any more about the Shelbys then, but you know, I'm cutting it brief, but you know, there was
one of those hog stories.
Yeah.
Though
it's not the only one. That's the funny part about this. I mean, that's a multiple feud kind of fuse there.
And that was another one that lasted, you know, 10 years plus.
Also really typical.
With the same, you know, same characters.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
And number one on Richard Parker's list, Buckskin Bill's Wild West Show.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the most fascinating things. And I guess as a historian, you kind of latch on the special things and you just kind of, I guess, get obsessed with it. And the Buckskin Bill thing is kind of my obsession. It's just this cool story that, you know, comes right here to Paducah. It was this huge traveling Wild West show. One time, that second and third season, it was the second largest, but right behind Buffalo Bill's.
Right.
And actually what happened was is four brothers here, the Terrell brothers, they were very well known in Paducah. They owned the Terrell Distillery. They also own numerous properties here in Paducah. And actually, if you go to the cemetery, they own pretty much a whole row of the whole families there. But they were inspired by Buffalo Bill's Wild West show that came to Paducah, decided to do their own.
That's a funny moment all by itself. Like, you know what? I really liked this circus. Let's start one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, people just, like I mentioned before, they just sold tickets to things.
Yeah.
If they could get something, some spectacle going.
Exactly. And they had a prior circus in about 1890, but it really wasn't successful like this Buckskin Bill's. And I say successful very limited because this was just an absolute chaos. I mean, Buckskin Bill's pretty much toured the our region, Tennessee, Virginia, Ohio, you know, that whole, but you know, they would go on full tours. But just all sorts of craziness happened. I mean, they would, one of the stories is they kidnap a girl, put her on the train, and basically haul her around for a few weeks, then throw her out. That's one thing. They get in multiple fights. I mean, there's a lot of stories I read where they would, you know, some of the members would kill someone, leave town, and then the cops would chase them down trying to figure out who
right.
did it.
Okay.
Kind of deal. So
the group itself was just a kind of a
rowdy
break the rules,
bunch.
Didn't care.
Yeah.
And carny type.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then the trails themselves had some problems. A lot of things that went on there was, you know, they couldn't pay their employees. They couldn't pay the rent on the train car. So they kind of got a bad kind of rap for them. But eventually, they're able to sell the Wild West show, and they sell it to a group of investors from Chicago, and then they take the Wild West show, and they run it 1 year as the Buckskin Bill's Wild West show, but then they change it for the 1904 season as, or 1903 season, excuse me, as the Cole Younger and Frank James historical Wild West show. And so here they bring in two notorious,
right?
You know,
City slickers,
outlaws.
That's what
yeah.
you get there.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, and this was kind of their retirement.
Those two were actually performing.
Yeah, yeah, they would have basically come out and, you know,
been
tell them a Wild
probably.
West story,
right? But it would that happened too a lot. They'd get the actual people to act out the crime itself.
Yeah.
I think the John Ford who shot Jesse James, he and his brother ended up going out and acting that out on the stage.
Yeah.
Years later.
Yeah. So very similar to the same thing. And then eventually those two quit and, you know, they made an actual pretty large sum of money. So that's probably why they, you know, didn't do it another season. But then it goes on for one more season and then it's done. But from some of the records I found, I mean, it had people who were from the start of it all the way to the end had connections to Paducah. So it's kind of very interesting, you know, story that's just kind of been left.
Let me ask you one question.
It's an also-ran to Buffalo Bill, which is, I guess, why it's under the radar.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about the book, though. I'm assuming, like, packed with pictures of all these kinds of things that we've been talking about, too. And we can see those actual people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did some illustrations, too, for it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Included, I think, about 12 original.
Oh, okay.
Try to bring the characters to life. Thing.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
That's great, yeah.
And you know, gentlemen, we've got to pay some bills around here so we don't degenerate like Buckskin Bill did. We keep our competitors on the run with our surprises. We have many of them. Make our acquaintance at once. We have the finest kind of pure lard. Have you a supply on hand? No reason why you should not. P.F. Lally, 10th and Trimble. Telephone 118.
What is this? What does it mean? He's
They're
selling
sell
lard.
You lard. Yeah.
But why does he begin with our surprises? We have many of them.
Surprise, it's lard.
What is he getting at? It's so mysterious that it makes no sense.
Knock, knock.
Maybe you grease yourself up here.
I
like
guess.
The guy running, and that makes you.
Okay.
You know,
you'd be pretty surprised
be
if you're running through the streets with lard
surprised
on yourself.
Surprised how faster you are, you know.
I think
so
that's
they're
right.
greasing up their competitors with their own lard.
Possibly. I
and
don't know what that all
make our
means.
Acquaintance.
Yeah.
Okay.
No reason
you
why you
really...
shouldn't have all this lard.
That's fine. They should like sell it on what I would use the lard for. All of my cooking.
That would be delicious. I've got to say that probably
love those phone
beats
numbers
all this
that are
diet
like
stuff.
118.
Oh, yeah.
The phone numbers.
The 118th telephone in Paducah, right?
Yeah. Little kids will always ask, like, was there somebody who had a phone number that was just like one?
Yes.
Every little kid has asked me that question.
I've seen them two digits. I haven't seen
Have you
them
seen
one,
two digits?
Yeah, I haven't seen one digit yet, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Richard's going to give us one later. He said he was looking through all the newspapers. All right, Jason, it's time. I'm going to lay it on you once more, the takeaway.
Oh, the takeaway from this whole thing. I mean, obviously, to Richard's point, there are stories that we have around here. And what I love about what you did is you discovered, first of all, that they weren't all in one really good place to find them and read them in a, you know, a simple, interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have the Jackson Purchase. This is where people live. And I guess every area likes that. It's got their own kind of wild stories out there.
And if I can just pitch something, I'm also the vice president for the Jackson Purchase Historical Society, and we're actually working on a digital encyclopedia. And we want people to submit their stories, their local histories to us so we can put that out there.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah. And reach people and then just the stories that they have. That can be included in that. Okay.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And yeah.
Visit our website for that.
Well, I hope
for more information.
Okay. And where can we get the book?
Bricolage has it. Yizer.
Okay.
Paducah Books. That's locally. Terrapin Station in Murray has it.
Uh huh.
But you can get it online. Any
online,
of the major
right.
retailers.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But go check those places out if you've never been in them. So.
Oh right.
Some of those
the bookstores.
Local shops. They're good people.
For sure. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return for some reason. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. We would love that feedback. If you did not like what you heard, you closed the app about 20 minutes ago. Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong. Our guest, Richard Parker, the Paducah School of Art and Design, WKMS as well, and the rest is history.